Hey, this is Booker T, five-time champion. You're listening to the Solid Monster Sound Off. Now, can't you dig that, sucker?
Welcome to a special episode of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, which you can listen to each and every Sunday on thesolidmonster.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio. My guest at this time is a six-time world champion. In fact, he has held 35 titles throughout his 20-year career. He's also a WWE Hall of Famer, and you can catch him on the Raw pre-show every Monday night on the WWE Network. Booker T joins me. Booker, Happy New Year. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, man, what's going on, man? Glad to be here. Happy New Year.
Now, I mentioned the Raw pre-show. I noticed you were back on there this week. Are you happy with things the way they are right now with what they got you doing, or are you kind of itching to do more?
No, I'm excited, man, to, you know, get a chance to actually do a little bit of WWE and actually get a chance to do reality of wrestling. This gives me a whole lot more time to actually, get my wrestling promotion down in Texas exactly where I want it. You know, right now we're in the process of, you know, building our 21,000 square foot arena as well as our wrestling school. So it's going to give me a chance to actually do both and actually give the proper time I need to reality of wrestling. Doing WWE work is it's tiresome, it's strenuous. It's an on-the-job thing 24/7.
Yeah, we're actually going to get into a lot of stuff about reality of wrestling, but I want to talk about some of your books, actually. I know you have two books. You published your second book last year, which talks more about your career, but your first book, From Prison to Promise, it documents your childhood. I was reading that and was just blown away by some of the stories in there. And obviously, you know, you talk in there about being arrested many years ago, serving 19 months in prison. How did that help shape who you are today?
I don't think it helped at all, actually. It was just something I had to go through. I did wrong. It was something I had to pay for. I knew that. First and foremost, but as far as it helped me, I don't think it helped me. I had to help myself when I was in that situation by, you know, trying to motivate myself by getting my GED, you know, working out on the weightlifting team, you know, training my body, you know, for what I was, you know, going to be preparing for, which was, you know, coming out soon. You know, I knew I wasn't going to be there, you know, my whole life, and I just knew it was a time, you know, in my life that I was passing through. But coming out, I knew I was going to have to work a lot harder because I did have an X on my back and people wasn't going to trust me, and I had to gain that trust all over again, you know. But it gave me a chance to think. I always say, you know, if I didn't go down and go through that, I really don't know where I would be at. But as far as how did it help me, oh, man, that's a hard question.
Now, you and your brother Stevie Ray, you end up getting into wrestling. You're working as the Ebony Experience in Global, GWF. And you guys developed some real drawing power while you were there, so much so that Sid Vicious took notice and actually got you both into WCW. Is that correct?
Yeah, man. Sid gave us a call one night. It was a, you know, Friday night. We was just going down there to do our thing. You know, my brother and I, we always, you know, being on ESPN television was worth its weight in gold. You know, we didn't get paid a lot of money to make that trip every Friday night. We did that for almost 2 years straight. And we said, man, we're going to bank on ourselves. If we're good enough, someone's going to call. And then that call came, and it was Sid Vicious saying, hey, guys, you know, I would like guys like to come to WCW. And we was like, yeah, we'd love to. And he said, hey, do whatever I can to get you guys in. Just be ready when the call comes. And about 3 to 6 months later, 3-4 months later, boom, we was in Atlanta, Georgia.
And then the rest is history, as they say. Now, speaking of WCW, this March marks the 15-year anniversary of the final Nitro. I just started doing a weekly countdown on my show of the 15 best matches in WCW history. Now, you had quite a few good ones yourself, many of which came in that Best of Seven series, which I think you get into in your second book, the series with Chris Benoit. In the second book, which is My Rise to Wrestling Royalty, you talk about Dusty Rhodes. And it's funny because I just was talking to Diamond Dallas Page, who I know is a good friend of yours, and he was telling me Dusty stories. It seems like everybody's got a Dusty story. But it was Dusty who came up to you and had the idea of doing the Best of Seven, and your first reaction was, well, you know, who's going to want to see this? So it turned out you had a lot of anxiety going into that.
Well, you know, I just didn't, you know, picture, you know, two baby faces, two fan favorites, going out there and, you know, having seven matches and it being, you know, compelling enough to where the people were going to want to watch it, you know, week in and week out. And then after a minute, you know, I thought about, you know, the challenge, you know what I mean? How cool of a challenge that really is to, you know, make the fans look at us, you know, from a different perspective. And I think for me, you know, being able to go out and, you know, work with Benoit, you know, without a net, you know, just all on the fly. We were going to make those fans, you know, look at us like we were the main event each and every time we went out there, whether we was the main event match or not. And that's what it turned into. It turned into each and every week the fans were wondering, you know, what were they going to see out of Booker T and Benoit this week. So it became something great, special.
And years later, I know WWE matched the two of you up again. They did another best of seven. I think it was for the U.S. title this time. And I think you got hurt. You couldn't finish the series. Was that whole?
You know, I knew going into that match, you know, the best of seven, you know, the second time around, you know, it was no way that I could recreate that magic all over again. Those days were far past me. I was a different guy at that stage, you know, and then I was working, you know, with Benoit in the best of seven, and I hurt myself on a house show working with Matt Hardy, and it was like, man, you know what I mean? I was just tired at that time, and something as simple as a hip toss, bang, I blew my groin out. And but like I say, just going into that match, I had doubt. I knew I could do it. I knew I couldn't live up to that all over again. That magic was something that was special, and it was something that could never be recreated ever again.
Now, was that a case of them trying to catch lightning in a bottle twice, or did you guys pitch the idea to them and to see if they would go for it?
No, they pitched it. They wanted to do it. You know, they wanted to see it again. You know, I'm sure the fans wanted to see it again. It was classic. It was something that was that would never be done again, you know, between two guys, I don't think. You know, if two guys could pull that off, I tip my hat to them. But I think they were just, you know, wanting to see it all over again, just like the fans want to see it all over again as well.
I want to ask you about Bash at the Beach 2000. That was the night you won your first world championship, a very controversial show. You must have seen and heard what was going on from backstage as it was happening in the ring. What was going through your head when you're back there listening to, you know, Vince Russo saying the things that he's saying? And when did you find out that you were leaving that night as the champion?
Well, I found out pretty much about 10 minutes before I went out and, you know, won the title. I knew that week leading up to it that I was supposed to be the guy, you know, to win that night. But everything turned upside down that night of. And but for me, you know, it was like I was totally disconnected from, you know, being world heavyweight champion at WCW. That night was a night for me that I never saw coming. It was just something that was totally out of the blue for me, you know. And that night I had already worked with Chris Kanyon as well. You know, a lot of people don't remember that. But I worked with Chris Kanyon that same night and lost. And then I find myself in a world title match to win, you know what I mean? So it was a topsy-turvy night for me, you know, with all the stuff going on with Vince Russo and Hulk. I totally was disconnected from that, totally removed from it. That had totally nothing to do with me. And at that point in time, I was like, man, I just wanted to go to the hotel. I just chill. I really didn't care that much about winning the title, actually, because I had a lot of questions myself. You know, I was wondering if the fans would take me, you know, in that position, you know, and be, you know, be on my bandwagon and support me in that position. It was a question that I wondered, you know what I mean, working in the company in the South. And then it happened. We went out there and performed, and, you know, I won, and the rest is history. The fans loved it. I was so tired, you know, I couldn't even celebrate that night. I went to my hotel and just, you know, laid in my bed, sit on the edge of the bed for about 45 minutes without even moving. But a lot of fans went out and they partied and they, you know, partied all night for Booker T, you know, and they was really, really happy, you know, to see me actually, you know, finally cross that threshold.
Now, before Seth Rollins did it last year, you were the last person to hold the world and the U.S. title at the same time. You did that on the final episode of Nitro. What was that whole night like? I mean, on the one hand, you are the last ever official WCW heavyweight champion. You've got two titles. You're on top of the world. But there's also a lot of uncertainty going forward.
Well, I mean, it wasn't any uncertainty for me. It was a lot of uncertainty for a lot of guys, but for me, I knew where I was going. I knew I was going to WWF, WWE. I knew I was going to be a part of that. I knew it was going to be a different road for me. I knew I was going to have to go up there and put in some work, of course, but I was prepared for it, unlike a lot of those guys in WWE at that time, you know. Excuse me, in WCW at that time, they wasn't prepared for, you know, what they were getting ready for. It was a war, you know. It was WWE versus, you know, WCW, and I knew that. Going in, I knew I was going there to be buried, you know, piled under a bunch of crap. You know what I mean? I knew that. You know what I mean? But I was willing to go there and overcome it and show those guys in the locker room that, hey, I'm worthy of being here. I'm worthy of, you know, being in the main event. I'm worthy of, you know, carrying the championship and, you know, being a part of this thing, you know. So it was one of those things for me. It was just a different chapter in my life. Every chapter closes, you know. We got our spring, summer, winter, and fall, you know, and it was just time for me to move on to a different season.
So you knew that night. I mean, there was never any doubt in your mind, I'm not just going to go home and sit and wait. You knew this is something I got to do.
No, I mean, I still had a contract, of course, you know what I mean, and I took a 50% buyout, and I walked away from a lot of money. Just to keep, you know, I believed in my talent, though. I knew how good I was. I knew I was just as good as all of those guys in the locker room. I knew how, that I was just as good as the guy that was next to me. And, you know, that's something that I could always trust. That's something I could always believe in, is my talent, you know. And I banked on it, and it worked out for me.
Now, the invasion in 2001, I mean, if you were a fan at the time, I mean, that was a big deal. You know, you kind of dreamed about what it would be like to see WWE guys go up against WCW guys. And I think, again, as a fan, I think that probably will go down as maybe the biggest missed opportunity in wrestling. It's kind of like finding a $100 bill in the street and grabbing the $5 bill next to it instead. Why do you think it didn't work maybe as well as it should have? Because the whole thing was over in I think, less than 6 months.
I mean, what you got to understand is a lot of, you know, the big money players, they were willing to sit out and, you know, collect their money. I was, you know, one of the few guys that walked away from money and went to WWE. And I don't blame those guys for sitting on those contracts. Those guys, I don't know what their contracts was, but, you know, the top guys, they were making big money. And they were willing to, you know, sit at home and, you know, collect, and which like I say, I totally understand. But for myself, I was making really, really good money as well, but I just felt like, you know, Ric Flair always said, you know, wrestler's worst enemy is time off. I remember Ric Flair telling me that many, many times, you know, I'm coming up, and I just did not want to, you know, sit on the sidelines and lose my momentum. So we had a lot of guys that wasn't in the war that, you know, not due to anything other than they, you know, they had money that they were collecting.
I want to ask you about your match with Triple H at WrestleMania 19. You were in a world championship match, and I've heard you in other interviews that you've done talk about how disappointed, I guess, a lot of the fans seem to be, not in the match itself so much as the outcome. I mean, for me, you know, they told this great story leading up to it with you because you've got such a great story, and again, you talk about that in your first book. And the story building up to it and where you were at that point in your career, and I guess, you know, him telling you, you can't hang with people like me, you don't belong here. And for it to end the way it did, I mean, fans aside, do you have people, you know, that night backstage telling you, hey, man, you know, you should have won that match? Or what was the overall?
I had office guys telling me I should have won. You know, I mean, I had guys who, you know, who was working in that writing script that told me I should have won. You know, but, you know, I never looked at the business like a lot of people do. I guess that's why I'm still in it. That's why I'm still a part of it. You know, it's always been the performance. It's always been the Shakespeare and the Romeo and Juliet for me. To win is great, you know what I mean? Anybody can win, you know what I mean? But to be able to lose and lose gracefully, you know, that to me has always been, you know, something that I had a lot of pride in. I always been able to go out and lose right in the middle of the ring. And, you know, it really didn't mean anything, you know what I mean? Because it was the performance, it was the art. Of course, it was a great story between Triple H and I, you know, the guy from the neighborhood and the guy that's got the silver spoon in his mouth and the guy who overcome all the odds and win, you know, the prize, you know what I mean? That's a great story, you know what I mean? You know, if it was Hollywood, it perhaps would have been different, you know what I mean? Rocky Balboa didn't win the first match against Apollo Creed. You know what I mean? So you got to look at it from that dynamic and that dynamic only, because if you get caught up in it, in the one loss, you could really lose touch of reality.
Now, this is more of a lighthearted question. Which was more fun to you, doing all those skits with Steve Austin, like in the supermarket, in the church, in the bingo hall, or the stuff that you did with Goldust?
Man, all of that stuff was good, classic stuff for me, man, because it was art, man. It was great, you know, art, you know what I mean? You know, people, you know, talked about me, you know, I was like, I had to take the Stone Cold Stunner in WrestleMania. And I was like, man, you know, I'm going to go out and take the best Stone Cold Stunner that anybody's ever taken, you know what I mean? When people look at it in history, they're going to, you know, see me taking it, you know? Because that's what, you know, the business is really, 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 truly all about. You know, and I went out there and I did it gracefully, man. It was awesome, you know, the beer, you know, tuxedo, everything. the stuff with me and Goldust, man, awesome, you know what I mean? 7-Eleven, you know, Slurpee, you know what I mean? Stone Cold, a grocery store, you know, chasing me around, you know, character building, you know what I mean? And I tell you, man, I embraced it. I embraced it. My thing was always to make whatever I had, no matter what it was, you know, make it the best on the show. Make it better than whatever anybody else has done on the show, no matter what little it is. Go out there and make it your own.
Well, I mean, I got to tell you, that supermarket segment, in my opinion anyway, still one of the best I've ever done. Yeah. But how does that work? Just real quick on that. How does that work? I mean, is that a case where, you know, you and Austin are like, all right, listen, this is what I'm going to do to you? Or he's basically just like, listen, I got to beat your ass, and you just kind of go with it?
There's one take. And we went all over that store and we made something special out of it all the way to the out shot. You know, it was classic, man. You know, stuff like that. You know, now I've never had one fan come to me and say, man, Stone Cold beat you up at a grocery store. You know, every time a fan comes to me and say something about that, they say, man, this fight with Stone Cold was awesome at a grocery store. You know, and that's what, you know. You leave fans with a memory of, you know, it's you know, people forget what they see a lot of times, but if they felt something when they saw it, they'll never forget it. And that's what I've always tried to do, you know, throughout my career.
Now, I would imagine you must watch some of these guys now on the WWE roster and sometimes think, you know, man, if this were a different time, I'd love to work with that guy or this guy. Who would that be? I mean, who really stands out to you right now? And it doesn't have to be just one person.
You know, not to, you know, knock anybody on our roster or anything right now, man. But, you know, no one really, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't see myself, you know, really wanting to, you know, would, you know, mix it up with any of those guys, you know what I mean? I'm so far removed from, you know, being in the ring and wrestling and actually doing that. You know, I really couldn't say. We got a lot of great talent on our roster right now, you know what I mean? But the way we did it and the way they do it now is two totally different ways, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we talked with Benoit and I, you know, we didn't have to talk about that, you know what I mean? It was just freelance. We just went out and did it. We were professionals. We knew exactly, you know, how to go out there and, you know, steer that crowd in a different direction. Now with so much television, these guys are working on so many shows, you know what I mean? It's just so different than it was back then, you know what I mean? But as far as talent, you know, it keeps going on and on.
I want to ask you about Paul Bosch, because he had a very big influence on you and what you're doing with your own promotion today, which we're going to get into in a second. Paul Bosch, for those who don't know, he was the legendary promoter of Houston wrestling and really put wrestling on the map down there. Talk a little bit about why he's such an important figure to you personally.
I was a kid, you know, growing up in the city of Houston when Paul Bosch was doing his thing, you know, and I used to watch that show, you know, every week. You know, I remember going fishing, you know, and we had the little black and white TV, and at 10 o'clock I would make sure, you know, I'd come from the dock and go, you know, watch wrestling. Paul Bosch was a big staple in the city of Houston, icon, as far as, you know, helping kids, you know what I mean? This thing was always PABA, the Progressive Amateur Boxing Association's slogan was, you can't, you know, open a knife or fire a gun with boxing gloves on. He saved so many kids in the city and did so much for them. You know, his memory lives on forever, you know, and I just hope to be happy, man, Paul Bosch was. And now being able to keep wrestling alive, you know, in his memory, it's awesome. I wear the ring of Paul Bosch, and, you know, we're doing great things down here, you know, creating our own feel of wrestling, our own Texas style of wrestling, but it's awesome to see these young guys go out there and perform at a high level here at Reality of Wrestling.
Yeah, so the promotion is Reality of Wrestling. You're coming up, I think, on 10 years this year. I know you underwent a name change a few years ago, but I think you've been running a promotion for, it's going to be 10 years, I think, this December. You've hit some pretty big milestones. You know, you got on the CW affiliate in Houston just last year. Now you're getting ready to open a brand new 20,000 square foot facility later this month. Talk about how ROW has grown over the years.
You know, it's definitely has. You know, we've had a lot of guys come on board, you know, and help us out and fuel this thing, you know, to get it to the next level. But more important than that, as my young guys, man, my students have stepped up to the point to where they actually believe in, you know, themselves. Now they believe their stars. They walk around the city there, people recognize them from, you know, being on the show every week. And it's been a partnership from the beginning of this thing. I always knew if I could, you know, get a lot of young kids, you know, a lot of young soldiers, you know, mold them, you know, the way I want them, I could get this thing done, you know. And we're doing it from a ground roots perspective, you know, all homegrown talent, you know. And one day, you know, our homegrown talent going to be household names, you know, around the world here in America. And that's what's really, really awesome, being able to create, being able to be a promoter, director, a mentor, you know, to a lot. I got over 60 students. And by the middle of 16, I want to have up to 100 students, you know, around here, you know, getting the work done, taking this thing to another level. And the CW, of course, man, being in front of 900,000 households, that's not something small. That's as big as it possibly can get. And now we want to actually be able to even make it bigger by having our new facility, our new arena, to actually be able to film this thing from a much broader perspective, because, you know, looks is everything. Perception is reality. And we really want to make Reality of Wrestling the next big thing outside of WWE and NXT.
So tell people about the grand opening show. It's coming up on January 30th. I understand you just announced a major guest for the show.
Yeah, man. My buddy RVD is going to be coming down and doing a meet and greet for me. Christening that first night in the building. I got a couple more guests that hadn't been named just yet going to be coming in as well. It's going to be a huge night for us. We're going to be having a cage match that night too, between two of our biggest stars, Ryan Davidson, Ruthless Ryan Davidson, and the Mysterious Q. Those guys have been going back and forth for the last year. And it's going to be awesome. It's going to be a great night to actually unveil the new facility and the new Reality of Wrestling headquarters as well. You know what I mean? So we're going to be a one-stop shop now where we can actually do our show, train our students. We're going to be connected to World's Gym. And all of my students are going to be a part of World Gym as well. Jerome Karam, a guy down there that made this thing happen for us down at World Gym. Big ups to him, man, because, like I say, I got a lot of good people helping me bring this thing together. So World Gym Arena, Reality of Wrestling Headquarters, January 30th. Don't miss out. Don't get shut out. Like I always say, why can't you dig that?
Well, you know, I first watched a few episodes many months ago, which people can do right now if they want to on the official ROW YouTube channel. They have full episodes that go up there. And, you know, I was very impressed by what I saw. You know, the production, the talent roster that you talked about, the announcing. I think Matt and Brad do a great job. I would say it looks like you're representing Houston wrestling very well.
You know, and that's what it's about. You know, first impressions. We want people to see Reality of Wrestling and say, wow, this is pretty good. You know, and I say, if they say that right there, they just say, oh, man, this is pretty good. We win every time, you know. And now, like I say, I'm building a new arena where we can light that place. You know what I mean? Have the proper staging. You know, make these guys feel like superstars when they walk out. You know, I wouldn't even say superstars. Make these guys feel like stars when they walk out of that curtain. And I tell you, make them feel like professional wrestlers, you know, when they put their boots on and know how serious it is to go out there and entertain that fan and make that fan feel something. Oh, man, it's so awesome. And that's what Reality of Wrestling is. It's going to be a big year for us. 2016 is going to be a huge year for Reality of Wrestling. And I'm going to tell you, if you hear about it in your area, make sure you go check it out. If you want Reality of Wrestling to come to your area, just make sure you send in to realityofwrestling.com and we'll definitely, put it on.
Now, Stevie Ray has also been involved with ROW. In fact, last year, the two of you won the ROW tag team titles. Let me end with this. There's been some playful back and forth in the past between you and the Dudley Boys about a possible match at WrestleMania, which just so happens to be in your home state of Texas. I can't think of a better place for that match if it were to ever happen. And I don't think Stevie's ever wrestled before for WWE. Has there been any serious discussion of a possible match? And is that something, I know before you said you're comfortable never getting in the ring again, but is that something you would be willing to step back into the ring for?
You know, I tell you, Great American Bash back in the day, WCW, you know, I got a chance to set my Wahoo McDaniel, you know what I mean? He came back and he laced his boots up, you know, I don't know if that was the last time or not, but it was just awesome sitting there next to Wahoo going in there to see him do one last classic match, you know. Oh, man, the Dudleys and Harlem Heat, that would be definitely an awesome, stellar match, you know, for myself to end it on. But I tell you, if it happened, you know, it would be great. But me and my brother, we, you know, did it, you know, a few months back, you know, with the Heavenly Bodies, two young kids in my wrestling promotion. We said that was the final heat. We said that was the final match for us, you know. But if something was to come around like a WrestleMania match with the Dudleys, it's no way I could turn something down like that. Of course, I put my boots on one more time. Well, I mean, right now, I'm still 228 pounds. I'm still, you know, I still got a 34-inch waistline, so I'm pretty much I'm good to go.
Still in wrestling shape.
I'm still in wrestling shape, you know what I mean? So I can still go, you know what I mean? It's just that I choose not to. I choose to, you know, step to the side and let these young guys go out there and do their thing. I want to move to the next stage of life, you know what I mean? Like with my radio show, Heated Conversation Sports Radio 60 every Saturday night. I just want to keep doing my thing and keep having fun as long as I possibly can. But more importantly, just keep evolving.
Well, I think that's a good bookend to things. Let people know how they can find you on Twitter and any other way.
Find me on Twitter at BookerT5X as well as Instagram as well, BookerT5X. Boom, that is. And I'm out there, man, doing my thing. Follow me on Twitter. Check out Reality of Wrestling. Go to realityofwrestling.com. Check out the YouTube channel. And let us know if you like the show, first and foremost, because it's good. It's damn good.
Don't forget January 30th, their big grand opening show with Rob Van Dam. I want to thank everybody for listening. Check out the brand new episodes of The Sound Off each and every Sunday. He is Booker T. I am the Solemn Monster. Be well, stay safe, and we will see you back here next time. Take care, guys.
Booyah!